Hello, everyone. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm going to cover in this audio Psalms 120. The title of the song I will call Deliver Me, O Lord. The heading of the psalm is A Song of Ascents. That's A-S-C-E-N-T-S. Now, why would this heading be attached to this psalm? Here are four options from the NIV Study Bible. It could refer to music that went up in pitch. Ascent means to go up, so the pitch goes up. I doubt that seriously. That sounds a little off the wall to me. It could refer to the steps of the Jews returning from captivity from Babylon. Jerusalem is up, so the Jews coming back from captivity would be walking up to Jerusalem. Third option, it was a song sung by the Levite singers as they walked up the steps of the temple. That seems reasonable to me. But I think most people say, as gotquestions.org says, and as Adam Clark says, that the ascents refer to the steps of a pilgrim coming up to Jerusalem singing this psalm. Jerusalem, as you know, was on a hill. And so as the Jews had to come up to Jerusalem on their three annual feasts, they would come up to Jerusalem and they would sing this psalm. Now, there are 15 psalms with this title, A Song of Ascents. Psalms 120 through 134 have that title, A Song of Ascents. David was the author of four of them. Solomon was the author of one of them. And 10 are anonymous. And this particular psalm, 120, is anonymous. We don't know who wrote the psalm. And so we begin in verses 1 through 4 of Psalms 120. The psalmist begins, In my trouble I cried to the Lord, and he answered me, Deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips, from a deceitful tongue. What shall be given to you, and what more shall be done to you, you deceitful tongue? Sharp arrows of the warrior with the burning coals of the broom tree. Now, as in so many psalms, there are external enemies attacking the psalmist. The psalmist cries out to God in his trouble, and here the psalmist says, God, answer me. A lot of times they say, How long, O Lord, will you wait until you do answer me? But here the psalmist says, He answered me. David said in Psalms 18:6, In my distress I called upon the Lord and cried to my God for help. He heard my voice out of his temple. He heard my voice. And my cry for help before him came into his ears. And of course that means more than just God heard David's cry and then didn't do anything about it. It means that God heard David's cry and answered David. So God is a deliverer. In verse 2, the psalmist says, Deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips. Now, there's three ways you can look at this deliverance from lying lips. Option number one, the psalmist wants God to deliver him from himself who has lying lips. In other words, God, keep my lips from lying. No, I don't think that's it. There's too many references to external enemies. For example, in verse 3, What shall be done to you, you deceitful tongue? So option number two, the psalmist is saying, Deliver me from the company of those who have lying lips. Option number three is, Deliver me, the psalmist says, from the malignant effects of those who have lying lips. And I think that's the proper answer. The psalmist is not just wanting to isolate him from people who are slandering him. He wants to be delivered from the malignant effects of the people who are slandering him. And verse three, the psalmist says, What shall be given to you, and what more shall be done to you, you deceitful tongue? When he says, What shall be given to you, he means what form of punishment shall be given to you, and what more shall be done to you, you deceitful tongue? Here's some other scriptures about evil tongues. Psalm 52:2, this is a psalm of David. Your tongue devises destruction like a sharp razor, O worker of deceit. There's a deceitful tongue, like a sharp razor. And in verse 4 of Psalms 52, David says, You love all words that devour, O deceitful tongue. Well, these verses in Psalms 52, as well as our verse here in Psalms 120, verse 3, show that that old proverb about sticks and stones can hurt my bones, but words can never hurt me, that's a lie. Oh, yes, they can. And the psalmist, as well as David, in Psalms 52, clearly says that deceitful tongues need to be destroyed. So in verse 4, we see what shall be given to the deceitful tongue. The rhetorical question is asked in verse 3. The psalmist says, "What shall be given to you, deceitful tongue?" And he answers the question in verse 4. This is what's going to be given to you, deceitful tongue, sharp arrows of the warrior. You're going to get shot and run through with arrows, with the burning coals of the broom tree. We'll talk about burning coals in just a minute. Let's look at this idea of the psalmist wishing that sharp arrows would come into the person who has a deceitful tongue who is accusing him. That is an imprecatory verse. And I've talked about that so many times through the Psalms. There's nothing wrong with wishing evil on your enemy as long as it's not done from personal revenge, as long as it is a matter of justice. But I must say, it seems to me sort of strange that a pilgrim walking up to Jerusalem, assuming that's what this Song of Ascent is for, he's walking up to Jerusalem and he's hurling imprecations at his enemies as he walks up to celebrate a festival in Jerusalem. That just seems strange to me. I don't have the answer to that. Now in verse 4, the psalmist also wishes burning coals of the broom tree upon his enemy with a deceitful tongue. A broom tree is noted for burning for a very long time. As Gill and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, John Gill says some broom trees have been reported to have coals lasting a year. Broom tree, by the way, is the NASB translation. The King James has juniper tree. I've got a picture of a broom tree, which unfortunately you can't see. Dictionary.com says that a broom tree is a prickly, yellow-flowered shrub of the moors of New England and Europe. Doesn't mention anything about the Middle East. But I think the thing to remember is that a broom tree burns for a long, long time. The coals last forever. And so the idea of the psalmist here is, I hope you burn, you deceitful tongue, and I hope the fire lasts, the pain lasts for a long, long time, as long as the coals of the broom tree burn. Pleasant thought. We go now to verses 5 through 7 of Psalms 120, and we will be finished with this audio. The psalmist continues, "Woe is me, for I sojourn in Meshech, for I dwell among the tents of Kedar. Too long has my soul had its dwelling with those who hate peace. I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war." Well, we've got some place names mentioned. The psalmist says, "I'm sojourning in Meshech, and I'm dwelling in the tents, among the tents of Kedar." Well, let's take Meshech first. It's mentioned in some other scriptures, Ezekiel 38:2, "Son of man, turn your face toward Gog of the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. Prophesy against him." Now, of course, if you're familiar with the prophecy fantasies of the hyped-up dispensationalist futurist, I was raised on that stuff, so I heard about Meshech all the time. That's Moscow. Well, actually, that might not be so far off, as we'll see as I go through the options as for what Meshech is. Now, this business about Rus, the land of Rus being Russia, is absurd. It's just a coincidence of pronunciation. It's unfortunate how so many of these so-called prophecy experts do that. They say, Rus, that's Russia. The 200 million man army is going to come down from Russia and wipe out Israel and the end times and the great tribulation and all this stuff. Ezekiel 39:1 says this, "As for you, son of man," that's Ezekiel, "prophesy against Gog and say, this is what the Lord says. Look, I am against you, Gog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal." Well, where is this Meshech? I'm going to give you three options. The first option is the option given by the NIV Study Bible. That's Asia Minor. In fact, as Wikipedia says, most reference books since Josephus identify Meshech as an area in modern Turkey, which is Asia Minor. Second option is the area between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, present-day Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan. Let me read you what Eastern says. The word Meshech means drawing out. Meshech was the sixth son of Japheth, as mentioned in Genesis 10, the Table of Nations. Meshech was the founder of a tribe, as mentioned in 1 Chronicles 1:5, Ezekiel 38:2, the verse I just read. Then Easton says that the people of Meshech were in all probability the Moski, a people inhabiting the Moskian Mountains between the Black and Caspian Seas. That's option number two. In Psalms 120, verse 5, which is the psalm that we're on now and the verse that we're discussing, in Psalms 120, verse 5, the name occurs as simply a synonym for foreigners or barbarians. In other words, Easton is saying that the psalmist is not too concerned about exactly where Meshech is, it's just that it's somewhere a long way off. Wikipedia says this, quote, "Georgians have traditions that they and other Caucasus peoples, such as Armenians, share descent from Meshach. That's kind of interesting. Georgia, of course, is between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, right north of Armenia. All right, so that's our second option. First option, Asia Minor. Second option, between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. The third option as to where Meshach is Russia. Easton says this, during the ascendancy of the Babylonians and Persians in Western Asia, the Moski were subdued. Now the Babylonians and Persians, of course, controlled the Mesopotamian Valley, present-day Iraq, and right north of present-day Iraq is Armenia. And you go a little bit further north, you get into the area between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. And so the Moski were subdued, according to Easton's, but it seems probable that a large number of them crossed the Caucasus Range. Now, the Caucasus Range stretches from the Black Sea to the Caspian Sea. You cross that range, and you're into Russia. So, according to Easton's, a large number of the people of Meshach crossed the Caucasus Range, spread over the northern steppes, mingling with the Scythians. Of course, the Scythians are the tribal people from Russia. There, they became known as Muscovs and gave that name to the Russian nation and its ancient capital, which is Moscow, or Moscow, by which they are still generally known throughout the East. The Muscovites, the Russians. I think that's probably pretty reasonable. In fact, all three of these places could be where the people of Meshach live because they might have moved from one place to another, starting in Asia Minor, then moving east to the area between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, and then moving north through the Caucasus Mountains into southern Russia. At any rate, wherever Meshach is, the psalmist says, woe is me, for I'm sojourning there. In other words, a long, long way from my safe home, sweet home. And then in verse 5, the psalmist says, I dwell among the tents of Kedar. Some other scriptures where Kedar is mentioned, Genesis 25:13. These are the names of Ishmael's sons. Their names, according to the family records, are Nebaioth, Ishmael's firstborn, then Kedar. 1 Chronicles 1:29. These are, referring to Isaac and Ishmael's family records, Nebaioth, Ishmael's firstborn, Kedar. So he's mentioned in two genealogies there, this Kedar. Who are the people of Kedar? The NIV Study Bible says they were Bedouins south of Damascus. Now, a Bedouin is a wandering person of the desert who takes his tent and his camels with him. He's not real big on national boundaries, settling down. He likes to be a nomad. I have eaten a meal in a Bedouin tent in Israel one time in the desert in the south. I am so glad I did that. I rode one of their camels, tourist place. And it was interesting. Bedouins were everywhere. We went into a parking lot, and my Jewish tour guide says, see these Bedouins here? They were sitting down on the ground with a cloth spread, and they were eating right behind the car. He says, they're at home anywhere. It's kind of interesting. Well, the Bedouins have been around for a long time. The NIV Study Bible says that Kedar refers to Bedouins south of Damascus. Now, south of Damascus is in the Arabian Desert, the northern Arabian Desert, that great desert that spreads from Damascus, around Damascus, all the way south through Arabia Magna, the desert between the Jordan and the Euphrates rivers. And then you keep going south into the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. That's Arabia Magna. At the northwestern extremity of Arabia Magna, where Damascus was, is where these people of Kedar were supposed to live, according to Easton's. They lived in black hair tents. This information is gotten from the Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 5. And now Easton quotes our verse here in Psalms 120, verse 5. To dwell in the tents of Kedar was to be cut off from the worship of the true God. Again, another metaphor for I'm living a long, long way from home. I'm out in the desert. The Kedarites suffered at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar when Nebuchadnezzar came in around 586 B.C. during the Babylonian captivity. And so I think that's who the people of Kedar were. They were Bedouins living in the desert. Now, Adam Clark says that they were Bedouins who not only lived in the northwest of the Arabian Peninsula near Damascus, but they extended all the way south to Arabia Petraea, which is that band of desert that goes through the Negev, south of Jerusalem, the wilderness of Sin, the wilderness of Paran, the wilderness of Shur, and across the Jordan River, you're into Petra. That is going a little bit far south and all the way to the Euphrates River going east, says Clark. Clark says, Kedar extended from Arabia Petraea and towards the Euphrates, and it is the country afterwards known as the country of the Saracens. Well, so Clark just spreads it out a little bit, but it seems to me that Kedar is vague enough that it could cover both Damascus and all the rest of Magna Arabia. It doesn't matter. The point is, Meshach and Kedar are used as metaphors. The psalmist obviously couldn't live in Meshach and Kedar, those two far separated places. He couldn't live there all at the same time. But what he's doing is figuratively saying that he is surrounded by hostile strangers, as the NIV Study Bible points out. These people of hostile tongues, of deceitful tongues. Now, the psalmist concludes his psalm in verse 7. He says, I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war. Now, this verse shows that sometimes, no matter how nice one is, enemies will nevertheless attack. You cannot appease every enemy that is out there. Now, it's true, a soft tongue will often turn away wrath, and it will. You should be nice as you can be as long as you can be. But sooner or later, you've got to take the gloves off or they will kill you. Your enemies will. When I was practicing law and had to collect debts, I'd start out being so nice. Oh, has perhaps the due date of your loan passed without you noticing it? If you will please get your payment in within, say, 10 days, we'll be fine and dandy. 10 days go by, no money. So I say, please let me hear from you within 5 days of the day of this letter, a little bit more curt, a little bit less syrupy. Third letter, if I do not receive payment within 10 days, I'll see you in court. So sometimes you can be nice to people and they still don't respond. But like I say, what a strange psalm to be singing on the way to celebrate Passover or the Harvest Feast or the Feast of Tabernacles in Jerusalem. What a strange song to be singing. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finished with Psalms chapter 120. This song does not end up with the usual happy note when we get to the last verse, but maybe the next psalm will be a little bit more cheerful, Psalms 121, which I will entitle My Help Comes from the Lord. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.